Hello, Illinois Radio Reader listeners. This is Elizabeth McMahon with the Pantograph for Wednesday, December 24th, 2025, and it's Christmas Eve. I'm going to start today with state and local news and features, and then I'll move in the second half to sports and some obituaries and whatever other stories we have some time for. I'm going to start on the front page here where we have a lovely little Christmas feature with the headline, Retiree Family Enjoys Holidays. And this is a nice feature focused on the Westminster Village, which is home to active, which is an active, close-knit community. There's a large picture here of Dave Kraft blowing a train whistle on Thursday, December 4th, at Westminster Village in Bloomington. And he's sitting with Phyllis Clay, and they were enjoying Christmas-themed model trains assembled inside the retirement center. And this story is by D. Jack Alkier, and I'll begin. Each year, as the holidays approach, a handful of folks at Westminster Village break out the model trains and build a little Christmas village. Every year, about 8 or 10 of us just put the thing together and run the trains, said Mac McElroy, a resident of 3 years and conductor for the Lionel trains. We say it's for the children to see, but adults love it more than the kids, he added, chuckling. On December 4th this year, he was operating the three tracks for about a dozen residents and staff in their special room decorated like a station shop for the Polar Express. And that's hardly the only holiday activity at the retirement community at 2025 East Lincoln Street in Bloomington, said Phyllis Clay. This will be her 7th Christmas there. If you look at our calendar, there's something going on, several things going on every day, she said. There are concerts, carol singing, and tree decorating, Clay said. A lot of times, every floor has a special party in addition to the parties that the staff plan for us, said Judy Burgess, whose floor celebrated on December 6th. We have snowmen in our lounge right now and lots of snowflakes, she said. It's just fun to see how people create a different look, and it's fun to walk all over the whole building and see how each floor decorates differently. Residents at Westminster, of which there are over 400, come from all walks of life, but become a tightly knit community, said Burgess, who didn't know a soul when she moved in. That sense of community is built largely around shared meals, McElroy said. Everybody comes down and sort of congregates before they go into the meal, he said, and you get to find out whose grandchild just had a baby or something like that. But it's nice. It's like an extended family here. Part of that comes from the meal staff, said Matthew Horton, executive director and executive chef and director of culinary experience. It's not always about the food. It's about the experience, and it's about what resident interaction. It's about that resident interaction that we really strive to instill in our team members, he said. It's also bolstered through their scheduled fitness activities, said wellness director Leah Rodriguez. In early December, Rodriguez invited the women's volleyball team at Illinois Wesleyan University for Holly Jolly Chair Volleyball with the residents. We have a lot of fun, she said. We get to laugh with them, and we just see them smile as well. It's really heartwarming. While it can be difficult to keep physically active during the colder months, it's important to keep moving around, said Rodriguez, who's also a member of Westminster's Life Enrichment team. We help with those activities and plan some extra activities around the holidays to keep everyone's mood up, she said. The very nature of Westminster's close quarters helps residents maintain a healthy social life during the holidays, said resident Betty Toland. Westminster offers independent living apartments and duplexes in addition to assisted living and skilled care on its campus. If you were in your house, you'd just be sitting there. In your home, you're by yourself. Here, you're with community and with family, and there's things going on, she said. I think how lonely I would be myself at home over the holidays. It would just be gut-wrenching. For her part, Burgess prefers to relax without the chaos of hosting the holidays, she said. At this age, I'm very happy to be here. I do remember the crazy, fun times we had when our children were little and we were at my parents. But still, when you're at this age, you just want to make, you want to simplify things that make life difficult. Like cooking. I haven't used my oven but twice in 2 years, Toland said, laughing. and that was for making Chex Mix 2 Christmases ago. My oven is my storage unit. I've got cookie sheets and pit pans. I hope to someday use those. If and when Tolan does get the itch to cook something, her neighbors will be there to help if she's missing anything, Burgess said. If I run out of this spice or that spice, and I don't have to go very far to collect my new teaspoon of baking powder and things like that, she said. It's just fun. Life at Westminster is all about creating an atmosphere of family, Clay said. When you bring a grandchild or family, everybody is so excited, so you share your family with them, she said. And moving on to the front page, above the fold, one of the top stories is on the economy, with the headline, Resilient Consumers Driving Expansion. And this is by Matt Ott of the Associated Press. I'll begin. The U.S. economy grew at a surprisingly strong 4.3% annual rate in the third quarter, the most rapid expansion in 2 years. U.S. gross domestic product from July through September, the economy's total output of goods and services, rose from its 3.8% growth rate in the April-June quarter, the Commerce Department said Tuesday in a report delayed by the government shutdown. Economists surveyed by the data firm FactSet forecast growth of just 3% in the period. As has been the case for most of this year, the consumer is providing the fuel that is powering the U.S. economy. Consumer spending, which accounts for about 70% of U.S. economic activity, rose to a 3.5% annual pace last quarter. That's up from 2.5% in the April-June period. A number of economists, however, believe the growth spurt may be short-lived, with the extended government shutdown dragging on the economy in the fourth quarter, as well as a growing number of Americans fatigued by stubbornly high inflation. A survey published by the Conference Board Tuesday showed that consumer confidence slumped close to levels not seen since the U.S. rolled out broad tariffs on its trading partners in April. The jump in consumer spending reminds me a lot of last year's fourth quarter, said Stephen Stanley, chief U.S. economist at Santander. Consumers were stretching, so, as was the case entering this year, households probably need to take a breather soon. The Conference Board said Tuesday its Consumer Confidence Index fell 3.8 points to 89.1 in December, the fifth straight monthly decline, and approaching the 85.7 reading from April, when President Donald Trump rolled out his import taxes on U.S. trading partners. November's reading was upwardly revised to 92.9. A measure of American short-term expectations for their income, business conditions, and the job market remained stable at 70.7, but still well below 80, the marker that can signal a recession ahead. It was the 11th consecutive month that reading has come in under 80. Consumers' assessments of their current economic situation tumbled 9.5 points to 116.8. Write-in responses to the survey showed that prices and inflation remained consumers' biggest concern, along with tariffs, despite Trump's repeated claims that inflation is a hoax. However, at least in recent years, consumer spending has held up even when data suggests they've grown more anxious about money. Tuesday's GDP report also showed that inflation remains higher than the Federal Reserve would like. The Fed's favored inflation gauge, called the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, or PCE, climbed to a 2.8% annual pace last quarter, up from 2.1% in the second quarter. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, so-called core PCE inflation was 2.9%, up from 2.6% in the April-June quarter. Economists say persistent and potentially worsening inflation could make a January interest rate cut from the Fed less likely, even as central bank officials remain concerned about a slowing labor market. If the economy keeps producing at this level, then there isn't as much need to worry about a slowing economy, said Chris Zaccarelli, chief investment officer for Northlight Asset Management, adding that inflation could return as the greatest threat to the economy. Another consistent driver in the U.S. economy, spending on artificial intelligence, was also evident in the latest data. Investment in intellectual property, the category that covers AI, grew 5.4% in the third quarter, following an even bigger jump of 15% in the second quarter. That figure was 6.5% in the first quarter. Consumption and investment by the government grew 2.2% in the quarter after contracting 0.1% in the second quarter. The third quarter figure was boosted by increased expenditures at the state and local levels and federal government defense spending. Private business investment fell 0.3%, led by declines in investment in housing and in non-residential buildings, such as offices and warehouses. However, that decline was much less than 13.8% slide in the second quarter. Within the GDP data, a category that measures the economy's underlying strength, grew at a 3.3% annual rate from July through September, up slightly from 2.9% in the second quarter. This category includes consumer spending and private investment, but excludes volatile items like exports, inventories, and government spending. Exports grew at 8.8% rate, while imports, which subtract from GDP, fell another 4.7%. Tuesday's report is the first of three estimates the government will make of GDP growth for the third quarter of the year. Outside the first quarter, when the economy shrank for the first time in 3 years as companies rushed to import goods ahead of President Donald Trump's tariff rollout, the U.S. economy has continued to expand at a healthy rate. That's despite much higher borrowing rates the Fed imposed in 2022 and 23 in its drive to limit the inflation that surged as the United States bounced back with unexpected strength from the brief but devastating COVID-19 recession of 2020. And finally, on the front page, we have a utilities-focused story with the headline, Big Tech Okayed to Tap Power Plants, and this is by Mark Levy of the Associated Press. Federal regulators will allow tech companies to effectively plug massive data centers directly into power plants, issuing a new order as the Trump administration seeks to help the U.S. lead the world in artificial intelligence and revive domestic manufacturing. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's unanimous order last week is designed to clear up pressing issues around so-called co-location agreements in the nation's largest grid territory, which stretches across mid-Atlantic states to parts of Illinois and Indiana. It could become a blueprint for how FERC handles an October request from Trump's Energy Secretary. From Trump's Energy Secretary Chris Wright to ensure that data centers and large manufacturers get the power they need as quickly as possible. It also comes amid concerns that the mid-Atlantic territory that it comprises about 65 million people will face electricity shortages in the coming years as the build-out of data centers outpaces the speed of new power sources coming online. Laura Sweat, FERC's chair, told Thursday's meeting that clearing the way for massive energy users, like data centers, to get electricity straight from power plants was a critical step to give investors and consumers more certainty on how FERC believes we can solve the problem of meeting historic surging demand and realize our greatest potential as a country. It would, she said, also protect regular ratepayers, even as evidence mounts in various states that regular ratepayers bear the cost of new power plants and transmission lines to feed energy-hungry data centers. Power plant owners applauded the step as their share prices rose steeply in Thursday's trading. Advanced Energy United, whose members provide solar and wind power, said the FERC order should help clarify how big power users can set up their own power sources. The Edison Electric Institute, which represents for-profit utilities, said only that it would continue to work to support rapid data center connection, protect ratepayers from cost shifts, and strengthen the grid for everyone. Jeff Dennis, executive director of the Electricity Customer Alliance, said the order showed that FERC is trying to address looming issues around fast-growing power demand and underscored the urgency to reform grid policy. Thursday's order grew out of a dispute between power plant owners and electric utilities over a proposed co-location deal between Amazon's cloud computing subsidiary and the owner of the Susquehanna nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania. For tech giants, such arrangements represent a quick fix to quickly get power while avoiding a potentially longer and more expensive process of hooking into a fraying electric grid that serves everyone else. However, utilities protested that it allows big power users to avoid paying them to maintain the grid. Some consumer advocates maintain that diverting energy from existing power plants to data centers could drive up energy prices without an answer for how rising power demand will be met for regular ratepayers. FERC's Thursday order sets up a couple new regulatory tracks. It requires the operator of the Mid-Atlantic Grid, PJM Interconnection, to develop rates and conditions for different co-location scenarios involving new power plants or sources. That could mean allowing a big power user to pay for only the transmission services they use considerably less than they might otherwise pay to connect to the grid through a utility. The order could also require a big power user that co-locates with an existing power plant to pay the cost to replace the energy that it diverts away from the broader electric grid. On page two here, we have a local crime-focused story. This is by Kelsey Watznauer, and the headline is, ISP, a person dies in police pursuit. A person who police say led troopers on a cross-country chase died Sunday night after being taken into custody. In a statement issued Tuesday, Illinois State Police said troopers in McLean County began to pursue a vehicle about 10:39 p.m. Sunday because the person believed to be the driver was wanted for aggravated battery of an officer. The offense, which is typically charged as a Class 2 felony in Illinois, involved an officer in the Leroy Police Department, state police said. No further information about the charge or the pursuit was immediately available Tuesday afternoon. The fleeing vehicle damaged an ISP vehicle during the pursuit, which crossed into Logan County, according to state police. Troopers stopped the vehicle on State Route 54 and took the driver into custody. The subject suffered a possible medical emergency, and EMS transported the subject to the hospital, where they were later pronounced deceased, according to the statement from ISP. No further information, including the suspect's identity, was immediately available Tuesday. I also wanted to cover some news briefs here on page two. We have a new public defender in Livingston County, and I'll read this quick brief. William Bertram has been appointed public defender of Livingston County starting January 1st. Chief Judge Casey Costigan of the 11th Judicial Circuit announced. He replaces Marianne Metoyer, who is retiring after holding the position for the last 5 years. As of fiscal 2025, the budgeted salary for the position was $182,136. Bertram, who has lived in the county for more than 30 years, has served as assistant public defender on a part-time basis since 2006 while maintaining a private practice. He told the Pantograph Tuesday that he will be closing his practice as of January 1st. He has also served as a trustee of the Pontiac Public Library since 2012 and had served on the Livingston County Commission on Children and Youth for 12 years. Bertram is also a member of the Knights of Columbus and the Elks Lodge 1019. And moving on, we have another brief here, which reads, Public invited to make cards of hope. Downtown Bloomington businesses are coming together for a fifth year to make cards of hope for Midwest Food Bank disaster relief boxes. Participants are invited to create cards from 5 to 8 p.m. January 2nd as part of January 1st Friday. Local businesses will offer additional opportunities in December and January. All card-making materials will be provided at each participating location. Tip jars will be on-site for monetary donations to the food bank. Cards may include a general message of encouragement or can be left blank for the food bank to fill in, according to a news release from Inside Out Accessible Art. Those unable to attend any of the card-making events may make their own cards and drop them off at 10 IOAA, 200 West Monroe Street in Bloomington by 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 31st. Participating businesses on Friday, January 2nd will be IOAA, Threshold to Hope, Angel Ambrose Fine Art Studio, and Art Vortex Studio. And let's see, there's a third one here, the Christmas Mansions set for December 27th. Christmas at the Mansions will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Saturday, December 27th at 3 Bloomington Normal locations. The event was originally scheduled for December 13th, but was postponed due to inclement weather. The locations featured will be Ewing Manor at 48 Sunset Road in Bloomington, David Davis Mansion at 1000 Monroe Drive in Bloomington, and Broadview Mansion at 1301 South Fell Avenue in Normal. Those who purchase tickets for the original event date will have their tickets honored for their new date. Tickets can still be purchased online at daviddavismansion.org/CATM for $15 for those ages 4 and up, and free for those 3 and under. Tickets are $20 at the door. The event is a self-driving event, meaning guests will go from tour to tour on their own. Each home will be decorated for Christmas in different periods ranging from the late 1800s to early 1900s. And in our local news section, we also have a little bit more on, we have a nice little feature here with the headline, Making Meaningful Moments. This is by D. Jack Alkier, and this is a focus on Sugar Creek Alzheimer's Center and their celebrations. And I will get started here. Just about once a month, the residents and staff at Sugar Creek Alzheimer's Special Care Center get treated to their own personal rock concert from the King of Rock and Roll. Well, at least an impersonator using the moniker Kelvis. Kevin Breitbarth is a retired police detective from Peoria who bears a striking resemblance to Elvis Presley and travels around central Illinois performing in the rhinestone style of the star's later years. The hillbilly cat himself was in Normal earlier this month on December 9th, shaking his hips as part of the holiday festivities at the Memory Care Center. The visits are just one of the many ways the staff at Sugar Creek help their residents who are being treated for dementia and Alzheimer's feel welcomed, supported, and loved, said Jessica Schoenbrunn, resident experience director. It brings a sense of dignity to residents, something that is especially important during the holidays, she said. Decorating is a huge thing that always sparks memories for them, Schoenbrunn said. Scents, smells, keeping the aromatherapy going for them, that always brings back memories. Like we're baking cookies right before the holiday with some of the higher functioning residents. Even those whose cases are more severe can benefit from the holiday activities, she said. They still feel like they're part of something, Schoenbrunn said. Sugar Creek also invites local school choirs to come and sing Christmas carols, family members to decorate residents' rooms, and Santa and Mrs. Claus, she said. And while volunteers are always keen to give, it's also important to get. They don't always think about what can the residents give for Christmas, Schoenbrunn said, because they probably spent a lot of years giving gifts to their loved ones or to church or whatever it might be they did. So I thought that was a huge important thing to do this season, was to make sure they had something to give as well as receive gifts. The cookies they plan on baking will be given to care staff at Sugar Creek, she said. The goal is to make each moment impactful, said Kristen Dure, the center's area community resource director. That cornerstone here with Sugar Creek or with Sinceri Senior Living is making meaningful moments by including things that they enjoyed when they were younger, middle age, and now trying to incorporate those things in their life and make meaningful moments with them, she said. Staff do their very best to make sure residents feel that, said Ben Underwood, who recently moved to the care center from Florida to be closer to his daughter. This will be his first holiday season staying at Sugar Creek. "I like it. They really try to treat us with courtesy," he said. "They know it's Christmas time, and they make a strong effort to make us feel at home. Those who work in memory care, like Schönbrunn, are motivated to make a difference for their residents because they deserve it," she said. "It's just important because it gives me a sense of purpose," she said. "I feel like I'm doing something. Even if they don't remember, I feel like their hearts remember, their insides remember. For what it's worth, folks like Underwood are glad to be out of the cold. Thank goodness I'm in a nice, warm, helpful environment," he said. "I enjoy myself. Can't complain." We also have a health-related feature here on the same page here of local news. And this is by a column by Jenna Smith with the headline, "Shaking Out All the Types of Salt." Do you ever get confused by the many different varieties of salt on the market shelves? You may be wondering which is better for health, for baking, or for taste. Most of the salt shakers we use today are filled with table salt. Table salt is mined from underground deposits to contain 99.9% of sodium and chloride. It has a fine granulated texture and dissolves quickly, making it a great salt for cooking and baking. Today, most table salt includes iodine as well as calcium silicate, an anti-caking additive to prohibit clumps. Our bodies need small amounts of iodine, and by adding it to salt, we are able to the required amount of this important nutrient. Like table salt, kosher salt also consists of the chemical compound sodium chloride. However, kosher salt has a larger, coarser grain that adds a crunchy texture to some dishes and drinks. Except for possibly an anti-caking additive, it does not contain any added minerals or preservatives. The term kosher salt is not used in accordance with the guidelines for kosher foods, but rather for its use for making meats kosher. The large granules help draw moisture out of meats and are used in the curing process. Sea salt is sold either fine-grained or in larger crystals and is produced by the evaporation of seawater. It's primarily sodium chloride, but it does contain small amounts of iron, sulfur, magnesium, and other trace minerals, which gives it a somewhat different flavor than ordinary table salt. Sea salt is commonly used in gourmet cooking and in specialty potato chips, such as kettle-cooked chips. Himalayan pink salt is harvested from mines in the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. Its pink color comes from its trace minerals, including iron, potassium, magnesium, and calcium. It's a popular choice to use as a finishing salt, which may be sprinkled over steaks or vegetables before serving. Which salt is better for health? All four salts contain the same amount of sodium by weight at 40%, but the amount of sodium per volume differs based on the size of the salt granules. For example, a half teaspoon of kosher salt has slightly less sodium than a half teaspoon of table salt due to kosher salt's larger crystals. While sea salt and Himalayan pink salt contain many minerals, you'd have to consume far too many teaspoons to get a beneficial dose. All of these salts contain sodium, which in excess is linked to high blood pressure. No matter which salt you choose, it's important to aim for moderation. And Jenna Smith is a nutrition and wellness educator with the University of Illinois Extension. I'm going to end this first half with some fun facts and history. This is today's Flick Fact on page A2. Today's question: in the 1960s and 70s in Illinois, besides those homes at Christmas time that had silver aluminum Christmas trees with the colored light wheels, 65% of the homes had live Christmas trees. Do you know what that percentage is today? And the answer? According to the American Christmas Tree Association, only 17% of Illinois homes have live trees these days. Ho, ho, ho. And finally, a little timeline from 25 years ago on December 24th, 2000. This is what was going on. As temperatures struggled toward the teens across the Midwest Saturday, a few residents of the Twin Cities struggled in a different sort of way. Some fought to stay warm, others battled to stay upright, and still others struggled against the strong winds that tried to pull them down as they climbed the snow-covered hills of the Twin Cities. A mother said a mother of two sledders said that one of her kids asked for snow for Christmas so he could go sledding, and she added, "They just can't get enough of this." Don't know if you remember all that snow. And I'm going to take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph, so please stay tuned.